Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. And this is Carl, and this is the Incredibly Strange Film Podcast. I think we're up to number 7 now. I'm really impressed. And it's a good series. I'd like to welcome back from a slight hiatus because she wasn't feeling well and got attacked by a cat. I'd like to welcome back Corey. Hello, Corey.
Hello, large cat. Hi, everybody.
And tonight we have as our special guest a gentleman who has a lot of credits and that sort of thing. Worked very, very much with Full Moon and Empire. Did the Subspecies series. Also one of my favorite crazy horror comedies, Terror Vision. We're very, very welcome to our show, Mr. Ted Nicolau. Ted, say hello.
Hey, Carl. Hey, Corey. Nice to see you guys.
Welcome.
Hello, everyone. Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. So I'm taking just a look at all this and that, and you have such a great filmography, and I just want to say, how did you get started? How did this all start for you?
All started for me in Texas. I went to the University of Texas in Austin back in the late 60s, and thought I was going to be a doctor at the time. And started taking, you know, pre-med courses. I met a guy named Daniel Pearl, who became like a really close friend of mine through college. He later went on to be the director of photography of Chainsaw Massacre and many other movies. One night, another friend of mine took me to see a movie that kind of changed my whole outlook on things, because I had been a singer and songwriter and had bands and stuff like that, and I liked to write, and I liked to write songs and music, and this guy took me to see a movie called Juliet of the Spirits by Federico Fellini, and that movie blew my mind. And then the next week he took me to see a movie called The Seventh Seal by Ingmar Bergman. And those two films kind of changed my outlook on art and what I wanted to do with my future. So Daniel Pearl and I both kind of jumped from pre-med to the film department at UT. And that's how it started for me. I started making short films. We had a great professor named Rod Whitaker, who wrote novels under the name Trevanian, the Iger Sanction and the Lou Sanction. And he was an inspiration. And we had all the equipment we needed to make films and got a little bit of money from public broadcasting to fund the films. And we were off and running and started a little film production company there and did training films and public service announcements and things like that, which eventually led to Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Okay, and so how did you get involved with Texas Chainsaw? Did it all come from being at school and all these sort of like hung together and got it done and let's make a movie type of thing, or what happened?
Well, Toby Hooper was like a few years ahead of us all and was kind of out actually, you know, making movies on his own. But when they got the money to do Texas Chainsaw Massacre, somehow Daniel Pearl, my friend Daniel from film school, was hired to be the director of photography. And at that time, there was only like one really good sound recordist in Austin. His name was Courtney Gooden. And I had been the boom operator for Courtney on some films. And basically, when Chainsaw was scheduled to shoot, Courtney was busy on another film. So that sort of fell to me as being kind of like his protege to get the job recording sound on Chainsaw Massacre. And that's basically how it happened. And it was, you know, partially Daniel Pearl, my friend, and his recommendation, and partially there was nobody else really that could do the job there.
Okay. Well, you know, did you know at the time that you were on this iconic film, or was it just something you did and then went on and did other things? What did it have an impact, do you think, or did feel the people involved feel that it would have an impact?
We were kind of like bratty, snobby film school kids at the time. And so we kind of had been trained to be prepared, you know, for a shoot day and you know, not to waste time of the crew or the cast. And on Chainsaw Massacre, it was a situation where we'd come to the set every morning, and Toby and Kim Henkel, who was the co-writer of the film and was a producer, they would sit and kind of discuss what we were going to do every day for hours and hours. And so it felt like we were in the hands of people who weren't quite as prepared as they should have been. Maybe they were rewriting the script as they went. And so it seemed to us that, you know, a lot of wrong decisions were being made. And it was a brutally difficult shoot, too, with long, hot days in, you know, summertime Texas and very minimal circumstances. So at the end of it, basically they ran out of money and kind of gave us a little percentage in the film and some deferred payment to finish the shoot. We kind of walked away from the film feeling like, okay, well, that was an interesting experiment, and let's see what happens. And then it was in the editing room. Toby cut it for like a year. And when we finally saw the film, we were kind of like blown away at what a powerful cinematic experience it was on like basically a shoestring budget. So whatever snobby kind of changed once the film was finished.
Mm-hmm. So from there, you know, you're doing sound effects, and then you get hooked up with one of my favorite little crazy films, and that would be Tourist Trap.
Yeah, you know what? Before Tourist Trap came that film Roar that you mentioned.
Oh, okay.
To me. So basically what happened was, after Chainsaw Massacre, my group of friends, Daniel Pearl and Larry Carroll and a few others, thought that we could raise money in Texas to make features. But the tax breaks that existed for oil millionaires kind of ended just about that time. And so we were stuck, not able to raise the money. So several of my friends had already started moving out to Los Angeles from Austin. And one of the people that moved out was Courtney Gooden, the sound man who left me the Chainsaw Massacre job, and Larry Carroll. So they were working on a movie called Roar that was basically probably one of the most insane films that anybody has ever attempted. With Tippi Hedren was the star. She was also married to the director. And the guy who also co-starred in the film, Noel Marshall. So anyway, my friends were working out there, and they kept telling me I should come out to L.A. and they could get me a job on the film. So eventually I kind of went, okay, packed up my van, which was basically the green van that was the Texas Chainsaw Massacre van, was my car. Packed that up like the Beverly Hillbillies, full of a bunch of old crappy furniture, and drove out to Los Angeles. And started working on Roar. And Roar, for anybody who doesn't know about the film, was basically a story about a man who's in Africa studying lions and tigers in the wild and basically living among them. And he's got a little house on a lake, and the lions and tigers kind of move freely around his house. Well, the actual shooting circumstances of the film was basically the same. Noel Marshall was completely insane and in love with his lions and tigers. There was like 100 lions and tigers on the property, none of them trained, and no like professional lion tamers or anything like that. And they were shooting 6 cameras simultaneously with no slates, and just rolling tons and tons of film And Jan de Bont was the director of photography on it. And so I came out, went out and met Noel and got hired to, like, sync the dailies, take all these rolls of film that were shot every day and try to find the common moments in them and put them all in sync together. And so I did that for, like, a month or two, and then Larry Carroll was the editor on the film, and so they started letting me edit some scenes because I had been a pretty good editor in film school. And so once Noel saw the scenes that I was editing, he kind of bumped me up to editor on the film. And so I worked on Roar for probably 6 months or so, and then finally, it was a rainy season in Los Angeles, and the sets and all of the editing rooms and the campgrounds and everything of Roar were built in a floodplain in the desert north of Los Angeles. And a dam broke upstream and just wiped out the entire setup. And 1 million feet of work print went floating down the river and buried in mud.
Oh my God.
Chem editing machines were buried up to their screens, like to the tip top in mud. And so we spent the next few months digging everything out of the mud, cleaning the film, and taking apart all of the chems to their tiniest electronic components and cleaning them with Freon and reassembling them so we could continue editing. Worked on that for a little bit longer, and I recommend people look at the Animal Planet documentary about the making of Roar, which is like truly one of the most crazy film productions ever.
One thing about that particular film, it took years for it to be finally finished. I mean, didn't they shoot and then there was so much post-production work that it was like at least 2 or 3 years down the line before it was really released?
Yeah, it had been shooting probably for a year or so before I started on it. I worked on it for probably 8 months or something like that, and then it went on for another few years. It was a massive, massive undertaking because there was so much film shot, and so to edit any scene you had to really go through a ton of material. And the flood kind of knocked it out of whack for a few months. And basically Noel just, you know, stuck with it. I don't think it ever really got a decent release in the United States until finally Alamo Drafthouse Releasing kind of took it on as kind of like the what the fuck movie, you know.
Well, can I just say that its big claim to fame is that it's touted as the most dangerous film ever made. tells you something right there.
Yeah, indeed it was. They called me out to the set one day to record sound and gave me a cane, like just a wooden cane, like a candy cane, you know, with a kind of crooked end, and said, okay, if any lions get free, just hit them on the nose with this cane.
And whack and lie on the nose.
Yeah, that was their training. And basically, they rolled camera, and the lions kind of, they were behind a hurricane fence, and they kind of went along the fence, jumped in the water, swam around the fence, and were suddenly running free on the crew side of the fence. And chaos broke out, and Noel Marshall came running over, cursing and screaming, and grabbed the cane out of my hand and went chasing after lions. So after that, I kind of like stayed away from the set. It was truly no concern for anybody's safety.
My God.
Noel Marshall got dragged off the set by a lion. Jan de Bont got like 90 stitches in his head from a lion. It was truly an insane thing. I mean, I have a theory about that movie.
That is truly nuts.
Melanie Griffith got bit and has a scar that'll be with her till the day she dies from this.
It was truly like nutty movie. And my theory about the whole thing is that Noel Marshall was actually the executive producer of The Exorcist. And so a lot of the money that went into the making of the film was Exorcist money. And it all has such a biblical kind of grand story to it, with the flood and with Noel Marshall. When the flood happened, Noel was in the hospital because a lion had bitten him in the leg, and he had gangrene in his leg. And when the flood happened and his lions were all getting free, he went, jumped out of his hospital bed and drove to the set. It was truly madness, really a mad situation. So that was,
wow.
that was Roar. And about the time that I was getting sick of working on Roar, Larry Carroll, who had been the editor before me, had left and was producing Tourist Trap with Charles Band and David Schmoller. And so David, who I had known in film school also, and had been like I was director of photography on one of his shorts. And so they hired me to edit Tourist Trap. And that's how Tourist Trap came about.
Yeah, I love that film. Now, Corey, you watched some films today.
I did.
What did
you watch, Corey?
I rewatched, because I love Bad Channels. It's one of my favorite campy movies ever. Because I saw it back in high school, and I was like, oh, I didn't know that was you. And I thought, oh, well, I have to rewatch that, of course. And then I watched Terror Vision, which was fantastic. You don't understand.
Okay.
I have a huge love of campy movies. And, you know, there's nothing better than 80s. 80s camp is, in my opinion, the best camp in the world. So I was a very happy girl
was
today.
Like honest camp. Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
funny,
absolutely.
Yeah, I love Terror Vision. And I always thought that that Bad Channels was kind of a lesser movie.
But
hear from people who love that film too. That's funny, man.
Are you kidding? No. Bad Channels was a fantastic film, and I had forgotten how much
cool.
I loved it until I watched it again, and I thought, oh, this is just, I was in heaven today.
Oh, that's
it was camp
funny.
Heaven for me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. No, you got to be kidding me. The girls trapped in the glass. No, but the best thing is the dance montages with the music, like the little music video montages. Those were fantastic.
Oh, right. Uh-huh.
With, like,
which
the
is your favorite
grunge band.
Yeah, exactly.
What was her name? Was it Bunny? That was my favorite.
Oh, Psychotic Symphony with the cow.
Yeah.
I love that band too, yeah.
They were great. Yeah. That was so good.
Because
right when grunge was coming out, so you've got these kind of pre-grungy bands, which was kind of, it was early really for that to be happening. So that was really enjoyable for me.
Yeah, that was the fun part of that film. Anytime you have music on the set, kind of just uplifts everything, you know.
Oh yeah, it makes it fun, definitely.
Yeah.
And then the creature, of course, was just fantastic.
Uh-huh.
Those creatures, the big blobby creature that turns into this almost like a I'm sorry, I'm forgetting the name. But anyway, it's like the dentist creature
something.
Almost. It looked like a Venus flytrap almost, except with like more heads. Oh God, it was great.
Yeah,
you know,
there's
such good stuff, you know, throughout your filmography. You know, both as director and editor, and I want to go back to one particular film and just ask you about it. I don't think I did this the last time, but I happen to be a huge Susan Tyrell fan, and I know that you worked on Butcher Baker Nightmare Maker, and I just wanted to ask you a little bit about that film, because you're the editor on it, and how did you get involved in that? And by any chance, did you have any interaction at all with Susan, who I think is just a goddess? So I'm just...
Yeah,
he has a big
crush. That's funny, because I did not get to meet her, sadly, but she was kind of scary in that film. So I got the impression that she was like kind of a freakazoid person. but
she
that
is.
Film came
Trust
about.
Me, that's part of the charm.
That's what he likes. He likes the freaky girls.
Okay. All right. yeah, that film, I don't know how I got involved with Michael Miller, maybe through Jan de Bont, but Michael Miller was the director of Jackson County Jail, and he was hired to direct what do you call it, Butcher Baker Nightmare Maker? It went through several different titles.
No,
yeah.
By a couple other titles, but I know it is Butcher Baker Nightmare Maker.
Yeah, so I went on to the film with Michael Miller as the director, and Jan de Bont, who I kind of knew from Roar, as the director of photography. And the first day's shooting was basically the out-of-control car on the mountain highway. And for some reason, the producers were not happy with the footage or felt like it was taking too long to get what they were getting. And so they fired Michael after the first few days shooting, and brought in what's his name
hold on, I'll get it for you here. William Asher.
Yeah, William Asher from I Love Lucy and Bewitched. And so basically, they kind of introduced me to William Asher, and he was, you know, one of those old school Hollywood directors who didn't really care about the editing process very much, just, you know, kind of did the thing on the set and actually got really good performances out of the cast. The only cast member that I actually met on that film was Bill Paxton, who had a very small role in the film as like the bully basketball player. But Paxton was so ambitious as a filmmaker and a student of film that he would come to the cutting room and kind of poke around and just go, what are you guys working on, and want to see footage. And he was such a likable kind of berserk character that we became really, really good friends for that period of time, you know, that movie. And then for a few years after, as he was rising, as his star was rising in Hollywood. So that was kind of the fun thing about that movie, was getting to know Paxton.
You know, I'm actually pretty good friends with Joe Lansdale. And Joe was very, very close to Bill. And they had worked on Cold in July. And when we had Joe on about a year and a half or 2 years ago, he talked extensively about his relationship, his friendship with Bill. Because Bill had just passed away at that point.
Yeah. No, he was, it's so sad that he's gone, because he was a true life force and a really, really good guy, you know, and really emotional. And I mean, he was amazing. He used to, he was our paper boy, it turned out. We discovered like years after. We got up early one Sunday morning, and there was Bill throwing our Sunday LA Times. And so he worked as a paper boy, like when he wasn't working as an actor. But he would do auditions during the day and then come over to our house in the late afternoon and kind of like complain about the auditions or bask in the glory of having done a good audition. He was like a really, really interesting character. Another Texan too.
Yeah, definitely, without a doubt. So now let's get into how, of course, you did Tourist Trap, and Charles Band was involved in that. And then how did you get involved with Empire and Full Moon and with Charles Band? How did that all work out?
That's what I was. I love Full Moon.
Yeah. Okay, so basically I edited Tourist Trap, and, you know, without tooting my own horn, I'm a pretty good editor. And can you know, fix a lot of problems in the cutting room. And so after Tourist Trap, Charlie Band was sort of a mysterious character, which I didn't get to know him very well on Tourist Trap. But he loved making movies, and his father loved making movies. And they had a film that was in trouble called The Daytime Ended, that the editor had quit, the director had quit, and probably over money problems, because there were always money problems back in those days with Charlie. And so he asked me to come in and try to edit and fix that film. So that was my second job working with Charlie. And that turned out, you know, the movie's not great, but it's better than it could have been, you know. And after that, I think I kind of went off and did some other films for some other people. And then when Charlie got put together the very beginnings of Empire, and I'm not sure if it was called Empire at the time or not, but with a movie like, oh my God, the one, Rage War, I think was the first thing that I did with him. And basically, I did a movie called The Alchemist that Charlie had directed.
Right, and, okay, that's what.
Yeah. The Alchemist was a film that Charlie had directed and then just kind of walked away from the producers, and that needed a lot of kind of editorial help. So I kind of worked on that. And then Charlie got Ghoulies together. And so then Ghoulies, I guess, was the next thing that I did. That was the very beginning of the Empire days. So I edited Ghoulies for Luca Berkovici and Jeffrey Levy. And that led to The Dungeon Master. And The Dungeon Master was basically Charlie's experiment in letting other directors into the company and testing directors to see who might be good for future projects. Because I think he suddenly, you know, was working on a deal that he was going to try to make many movies per year. So I started editing The Dungeon Master and cutting, you know, scenes that all these, you know, kind of fresh directors were shooting. And I thought, man, I could do as good as these guys. And when the film turned out to be a little bit short in its running time, I proposed myself to direct a sequence for it to Charlie. And he said yes. And so that kind of set me on the path to directing. I mean, I had been, studied directing in film school, so that was always my goal. But I got there through editing, which I think is, you know, equal in its art to, you know, director photography and composers and directing.
Yeah, it's you know, and I mean, there's so many of those films. And one would be, of course, Trancers, which I just love, and again adore Tim Camerson, and Jack Death, and that whole thing, and just so many good things that you did, I just lost it here, damn it.
Subspecies.
Yeah.
Subspecies.
Subspecies. Okay, let me just talk about Trancers for a second, then we'll get on to Subspecies. Trancers was probably the first, like, really legit production, you know, that Charlie did. It had a script by Danny Bilson and Paul DeMeo, who were really good writers, who went on to have a pretty good career in Hollywood and then in game, you know, video game development. And Tim Thomerson and Mac Allberg, who was the director of photography of that film. And Mac brought a look to it, like, you know, he had a style of lighting that was magical, I think. And so that was another film that needed some help in the cutting room, but was such a solid kind of concept and script. And Tim Thomerson was so good. Helen Hunt, and, you know, it was great, you know. So you want to jump on to Subspecies?
Oh, absolutely.
That would make me happy.
Okay, so jump forward a few years after TerrorVision, and after TerrorVision, I kind of got stuck at Empire for a couple of years, writing scripts that never got made. And then I wrote a script called, then Charlie, his wife at the time, Debbie Dion, I think they started having contests around the building for titles. If you came up with a title that they ended up using, you could make $500. And somebody came up with the title of Space Sluts and the Slammer. And so somehow I got the job to write that script, and ended up writing what I thought was a really funny kind of sex farce set in space. And it was going to shoot on the set left over from what was it, Peter Manoogian film about boxing on intergalactic boxing.
Robot Jocks.
No. Robot Jocks was Toby Hooper. Stuart Gordon. But there was something that was shot in Italy. Anyway, Charlie had a studio in outside of Rome that was the Dino De Laurentiis Studios. And basically, there was all these intergalactic sets that were left over, and the production designer, Giovanni Natalucci, who had done TerrorVision, who was a madman of an Italian stylist. So I went over to start shooting that film. We cast it, we had the sets, and Empire closed down for, you know, lack of funds or for, you know, some kind of financial problems. And so that was a film that never got made. And then a couple of more years passed. I did some other movies, and Subspecies. Finally, I came back and started editing for Charlie again, probably about the time of Meridian. Robot Jocks, the Stuart Gordon film. And somebody came to Charlie. This was like 1990, after Ceausescu, the dictator in Romania, was killed, and you know, freedom came to Romania. So a guy came to Charlie, who was like a expatriate Romanian, who had been living in the States, and he wanted to go back and set up business in Bucharest, and kind of sold Charlie on the idea that there could be a co-production where the Romanian studio would pay for all the Romanian costs and Charlie would pay for the American costs. And so he had a script called Subspecies that was pretty good but needed a little bit of work, and I kind of hired a friend of mine to come in and do a rewrite on it. They sent me over there for a week to just kind of scout locations and meet the people. And this was like probably early summer of 1990. So it was like, you know, 6 months after the revolution. And Romania was just this sad wasteland of a place, you know, with, you know, gray everywhere, nothing in the stores, very poor people. But I met Vlad Paunescu, who was going to be the director of photography, and his girlfriend at the time, who later became his wife, Juana Tofan, who was a brilliant costume designer. And Vlad didn't speak any English, but she spoke enough English that we could kind of communicate. And they took me around Romania. We looked at the locations that we would be able to shoot in, and for me, that's all it took, you know, to see the locations that you could access for a movie. So I came back to the States, and even though the Romanian said, "You'll never be back here again. We'll never see you again." But I came back and told Charlie, "Yeah, let's do this film. It would be amazing." And so I went back that autumn with the script and with part of the cast, but not everybody. We were stuck looking for a decent actor to play Radu, the vampire. And we had kind of selected one guy, and then I had to go start pre-production. So I left Los Angeles, came to Romania, started casting and seriously scouting locations there. And in the time that I was gone, the casting director brought in Michael Watson, who ended up playing Stefan in the first subspecies. And Michael at the time was working on General Hospital, and he recommended that they meet Anas Hove, who was playing a villain on General Hospital at the time. And so they met Anas and fell in love with him. And next thing I knew, you know, I had my cast was the first, the actresses came out, Laura Tate and Michelle McBride. And then came Michael Watson and Anas Hove, and they were buddies, and they were mad drinkers, and wine was $1 a bottle in Romania at the time. So that movie turned into like one of the most difficult, out of control trains ever, with the Romanian crew kind of going on strike all the time, nobody knowing how to work with the Western crew. I ended up keeping a journal day by day of the making of that film just to maintain my sanity, because every day would be like another disaster on the set, and every night would be drunken madness at the dinner table in this restaurant that was in a kind of a deserted mountaintop hotel.
I'm very familiar with Romanian drunkenness. I can just imagine.
Oh, my God. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. And, you know, the thing that kept me sane was keeping this journal, my friendship with Vlad and Juana, who were kind of like the people who kind of, you know, were suffering through it with me, because Vlad was kind of managing the Romanian crew. I was trying to keep a handle on the Americans. And the police would be called out every once in a while because Anas would be like going crazy on the balcony of his hotel and pissing on soldiers down below. It was truly one of the craziest experiences ever. Went from being like a 4-week shoot to being like a 2 or 3 months there trying to finish the film. And in the end, are you guys still there?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, we're here.
Oh, okay, okay.
We're listening.
Yeah, okay. In the end, when we had like 2 weeks left to shoot, we had come back from the mountains and were in Bucharest, and Anas was banned from the hotel we were staying at for some infraction that he did. And because not only was he drinking too much in those days, but he's like a volcanic personality that can just, you know, and he's got this stage voice, as you may know from watching him. So he could be a very scary person too, you know. And Michael Watson at the time was, you know, just had a thing with authority, and it was nightmarish. But anyway, we were back in Bucharest, and there was like a drunken madness every night at the hotel, and Laura Tate went to bed and woke up with somebody in her room that wasn't supposed to be there. So she freaked out and called Anas, and Anas came and raised a fuss at the front desk of the hotel. And this is a giant hotel in Bucharest. And I was sick with the shits from drinking some bad wine or something. So I was like trying to sleep, and I got a call from the hotel desk, you know, telling me I better come get my colleague and get him out of there because the police were on the way. So anyway, Laura Tate packed her bags and left that morning. We still had like, you know, scenes left to shoot with her. And
holy crap.
So we had to cast a body double to play those scenes. Yeah, it was. So anyway, not to go on too long about Subspecies. So Subspecies was like a nightmarish film. But when I got back to the States, something about the beauty of being in a place where there's not
where people have nothing, but they still manage to have a sense of humor, where
yep.
the actors have like a, where the theater is really a vital part of the life of the city, and the actors are artists, and after the plays let out in the evening, there are bars where they go or restaurants where they go, and they're raucous and incredibly fun. There's something about that which felt like Paris in the 20s, that,
yeah.
you know, all of the bad memories kind of faded, and you're just left with a feeling of like, wow, just when you're so miserable, to share a bottle of wine with a couple of friends and talk it through and laugh, it was amazing. So when Paramount liked Subspecies, the first one, and wanted another one, I was like ready to sign up for it. Didn't want to bring Michael Watson back, but I had ended up really forming a really strong friendship with Annas, so I asked him to come, and I made him a deal that no drinking on set ever. But when he was in, you know, at the end of the day, when they were taking off his makeup, and that would be like an hour process, I would join him and we would drink a bottle of wine then, you know. And so that kind of cemented our friendship, and Subspecies 2 and 3 kind of came along in one gigantically long, crazy shoot as well.
No, and actually, you have a new one that's in post-production, don't you? Number 5?
What's that? It's not in post-production now. It's in pre-production. I wrote the script for Subspecies 5, which is basically a prequel to the story. When we finished Subspecies 3 or 4, wrote it. But at the time, Full Moon kind of like ran out of money, and there was that couldn't be made at the time. And then ever since then, Charlie's budgets have been too small, really, to do the film justice, because we really don't want to make some inferior film, when we sort of achieved at least, you know, something ambitious for the no money that the first few films cost. Charlie finally, you know, has the money to do the film. I was supposed to go shoot it last spring, and then the pandemic hit, and then we were thinking we could shoot it this summer, but that's not looking very possible. So we're going to go probably shoot it in Serbia in the springtime now.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, we really want to do it. Annas is on board. And Denise Duff, who made such a powerful character in Subspecies 2 and 3 and 4. So we're looking forward to doing it. But,
absolutely. Absolutely. Good luck on that. I know the pandemic has put so many things in on hold. You know, but I do wish you the best with that and that you could have done.
Hey, thank you. Yeah, we're looking forward to it. It'll be good, you know.
And hopefully less traumatic stories. But that sounded like a wonderful time, despite it.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
you know,
I'll
the thing
you
about
that.
What you were saying, you know, you go through something like that, and the bond to the people that you're with, and that, it's like you said, it's like you sit down, you work things out over a bottle of wine. And those are the memories and the energy that you get from something like that. I mean, you're never going to forget
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you know, that changed my life. That movie, Subspecies Number 1, changed my life, you know, pretty much for the better, I think. You know, I mean, I got a movie out of it that I'm really proud of, and that has, you know, kind of managed to gain fans over the years. But the friendships that I formed on that film were like really, you know, you every movie you become really tight with people that you're working with, and usually after the movie ends, you're still friends, but you rarely, if ever, get to see them. And with Subspecies, I don't get to see everybody very often, but I see Vlad and Juana usually once a year when they come to the States to do business. And they flew me and Anas out to Bucharest like a couple of years ago for the 25th anniversary of Castel Films, the studio that, that we kind of formed around the making of Subspecies 2 and 3. So yeah, I mean, the friendships and the, you know, just the movie-making experience and being in such exotic locations and living in a place long enough to really get the feeling of the life there. You know?
So I would imagine that the time that you made that film, I knew it was in Romania during that time, and I thought, my goodness, that must have been extremely interesting to be making a movie there during that time of political unrest. I mean, I'm very familiar, so that was an incredible story. I'm so glad that I got to hear that. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I'll send you the Subspecies journal if you're interested in reading it.
I would love that.
All the details of it, you know.
Thank you.
So send me your information, you know, and I'll send it to you.
Thank you.
That movie especially, because there was so much political unrest, you know, we were there right up until almost Christmas time, and at Christmas time was like the 1 year anniversary of the revolution, and so it was becoming, you know, like more gunfire on the streets and marching in the streets, and you know, we were kind of like innocent, stupid Americans in the midst of something that was like much bigger and a little bit scarier than anything we had ever experienced, you know.
Oh yeah, absolutely, that's incredible.
What do you want to talk about now?
We're all like speechless. Carl, what do you want to talk about next?
How about vampire journals? What, any love for vampire journals out there? No love for vampire journals.
So basically, go ahead for the vampire journals.
Vampire journals, Charlie came to me one day, and you know, back in those days, the way that movies were approved at Empire and Full Moon was basically Charlie would come up with artwork for posters or for video boxes, and he, you know, loved the Subspecies films, but he loves gambling too and casinos, and so he proposed to me, why don't we do a film about vampires, but you know, more sophisticated vampires who live underneath a casino. And so that sounded like a kind of an interesting idea to me, although I'm more drawn to the Nosferatu kind of savage vampires than I am to beautiful vampires, but it seemed like an interesting kind of world to explore. I wrote the script and went to Bucharest, started scouting locations. Now Vlad Palnescu was running the studio, so he wasn't going to be director of photography anymore. Adolfo Bartoli, the Italian who had done a lot of movies for Charlie and some of Stuart Gordon's films and some of my kids' movies, really excellent lighting cameraman. We went to Bucharest, started scouting locations and casting and doing all the pre-production, and Charlie ran out of money again. It was like sort of the constant story of Full Moon was like, you got money, you don't have money. And basically so Charlie was going to get the money, and so we just had to hang on in Bucharest for a while. So we basically spent 6 weeks in Bucharest looking at art books, walking the locations, talking to Vali Călinescu, the Romanian production designer of the film, and mapping out the look of the film in a way that was more detailed than I had ever been able to do before, and kind of getting Adolfo on board with a certain kind of lighting for the film. And finding the perfect locations for everything. And so when we had the money to start shooting again, we had a really interesting look for the film mapped out. So in a way, I'm most proud of the actual kind of lighting in that movie and the, some of the shots of all my films. I think that's probably the most like elegant looking. It has some drawbacks and it's maybe a little bit slow, and the climax is, you know, the problem with those movies was basically you had a limited number of days to shoot. I don't know, maybe this was 20 or 22 days or something. You spend a lot of time shooting the, you know, the scenes, the talking, the getting from place to place. And if the schedule is not done right, you end up near the end of the schedule having to shoot the climactic scenes and by then you've kind of like lost a day, and so you've got to make up time on the climactic scenes. And that happened on Vampire Journals as well, that the climax sort of suffers a little bit from the way it was scheduled and the way that, you know, that all the film, Full Moon movies work, which was a lot of talk and not a lot of action. But I'm super proud of that film anyway.
Well, it's very pretty to look at, definitely.
Yeah.
As well, yeah.
Hi, this is Doc. I actually have a question about Crash and Burn. That you worked on the editing of Crash and Burn. Did you have anything to do with the stop motion animation of the giant robot in that?
No. Basically, Charlie, from the very earliest days of his production, was friends with David Allen. And David Allen was the stop motion animation guy. David Allen was like a incredibly genius, kind of an oddball character, but was the one who did the stop motion animation for the Subspecies films, was the guy who did the miniatures for Robot Jocks and for Dragon World, my film Dragon World. And so he was the one who did the robots. That was like a, you know, one of Charlie's movies that you know, needed some help in the cutting room, but again was sort of a, you know, like a interesting idea. I mean, the thing about those movies was the studios at that time, until Terminator, really the studios were not making great science fiction movies. And so Charlie kind of filled that gap along with Roger Corman until Terminator came along.
Very cool. Yeah, actually, the first Full Moon movie I ever saw actually was Crash and Burn. And I was like, oh, I like that studio. It's like, and I remember back in the 90s and early 2000s, like if you saw the Full Moon logo, you knew it was going to be fun one way or another. So that's a great thing.
That's cool, yeah.
That's a great thing about the studio.
Yeah, and I think their box art really stood out on the shelves too. And that was Charlie. I think Charlie loved making movies, but he was a genius salesman, you know.
Yeah, I a little strange coincidence. The movie Fallen Angel, or I don't remember, I think it was a Fallen Angel or something, or Angel Rising, whatever. It was about a demon, female demon who came up from hell to wreak some havoc on bad guys. The front cover painting is actually shockingly similar to my first cousin. So
wow,
I was like,
funny.
Huh. Yeah, and apparently... She didn't exactly admit to anything, but she said, yeah, I did some modeling in that time, and there were a couple studios involved. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So if you look at the cover, the actual painting on the cover, it may be my cousin. It may not be my cousin. I can't confirm or deny.
Wow, that's amazing, man. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no.
That would be very cool.
That was, you know, standing out on the shelves of the video stores. You know, I remember those days. Like, it's like so many hours spent, like, looking for a movie to watch, you know, just wandering the aisles. And then, you know, having to return the videos, you know, the next day was, like, very hard.
Yeah. It just, the full moon movies, like I said, they're just a ton of fun. I mean, every once in a while you get one, you're just like, oh, brother. But there's something about them that just, there's a lot of work that went into them, and you can feel the passion of the filmmakers when they, you know, with editing, just putting everything together. You may chuckle at it, but you have fun. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah, that was Empire was sort of the same, except the ambitions were a little bit higher and the budgets were higher. But the people that were working at Empire and at Full Moon, you know, the filmmakers, the editors, the construction people, everybody was really committed to, we thought we were going to rise like a mini studio, you know, and we would all rise with it. And, you know, it didn't quite work out that way. But we had a great time kind of getting there, you know.
Yeah, I remember a few years
so
ago. Yes, they are. I think a few years ago, Charles Band put out a huge Blu-ray box set. Actually, I'm looking up at it right now on my shelf here. It's an Empire box set, and it had like the Eliminators, and it has Terrorvision, like Troll 1 and 2, you know, all of basically a majority of the Empire pictures, including Robot Jocks. And it's such a cool collection.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure if you actually were able to get a copy of it.
Yeah, I did get a copy of it. I like go to his office every once in a while and kind of rate it for whatever kind of movies I can get my hands on of my films. And that was one, because the Terrorvision was so hard to get for so many years, and it sort of added to its kind of renegade reputation. But when Scream Factory put out that HD Blu-ray, it sort of brought it back to life and made it accessible to people again. And you know, I think it gained a lot more fans. And Charlie got them to let him, you know, 50 or 100 copies or whatever it would take to, because he doesn't own the rights to that film. You know, it kind of went to somebody else in the collapse of Empire. But yeah, that's that series of films, you know, part of it was that, you know, he was sending crews, I guess Peter Manoogian went to Mexico for Eliminators, a lot of us for Troll and for Robot Jocks, that was all at that studio in Italy. And that was like, you know, it was, you, when you go to work at the Dino De Laurentiis studios in Italy, it was sort of a, you know, abandoned wreck of a studio, but it had so much history there. And the crews that we put together for those films were like, you know, just amazing craftspeople and artists. So those films all kind of benefit from the fact that they were a little bit more expensive than the Full Moon movies of later years, but also also he had, like, you know, Dennis Paoli writing for Stewart and Danny Bilson and Paul DeMeo writing for Charlie and for themselves. Yeah. So the benefits of shooting in Italy was just, you know, you could get actors to go just for the free trip to Italy too.
beautiful scenery, cannolis every day. There's nothing to complain about.
Oh man, no. The studio was like outside of Rome, but it was like 20 minutes from a little beach town called Tor Vionica. And we were staying at a little beach hotel in Tor Vionica. And, you know, you'd finish shooting, because the Italians don't like to work overtime. And Saturdays, they don't like to work past 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So that left a lot of time to, you know, for leisurely dinners on the patio of the restaurant. You know, basically we thought, you know, that we had made it and the rest of our lives were going to be like that, you know? It was pretty wonderful. Little did I know I'd end up going to Romania and freeze my ass off a couple of years later. You know.
It's a whole different world in Romania.
Yeah. But in the end, it's like the same things apply. The artists and craftspeople are phenomenal, you know. They just have less to work with.
Yeah.
Very cool. Now, Carl, are you still here, Carl? I don't know what's going on with Carl's connection here. So, well.
Carl disappeared. Oh, man. Uh-huh.
Yeah. His phone's active, but I'm not sure what's going on.
That's odd.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, hi, Carl, wherever you are.
That's all right. That's okay. We'll get everything figured out. So,
yeah.
Ted, thank you so much for being on our show this evening.
And it was a pleasure.
I've actually been involved with the other shows that you were on over at with our old partner, Steve. And I've always loved having you on the show, and you're just such a cool person to have on with all the experiences you've had and all the movies and just pure epic awesomeness. I know I'm fanboying.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Much. Yeah, man. No,
you're very welcome.
I've had been lucky, you know, lucky and unlucky at the same time. So I guess it worked out. You know, I had a pretty good life. You know, and I hope
I get to continue
making movies.
I do too.
Thank you so much. Such a pleasure to talk to
you.
Wonderful stories.
Yes.
Wonderful movies. My goodness, wonderful movies. Such
a
pleasure to watch
so
them.
Much. Yeah. So don't forget, send me your information. I'll send you a copy of this.
Thank you so much. I will do that. I'm very, very happy to read all that.
Okay, man.
Very cool.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Before you leave, do you have a website that you'd like to give everybody?
I don't have a website, actually. I have a Vimeo page where you can see some of my stuff. I have Facebook, Ted Nicolau on Facebook. So, I invite people to join me on Facebook. Yeah, and I am selling these subspecies journals. If there's any subspecies fans out there,
oh, most definitely. I've got them all on DVD, Blu-ray, and
digital. Okay, cool, man.
Right. Again, thank you
so
very
thank
much.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for being on the show, and
okay.
We really appreciate it.
Okay.
Have a great night.
I'm sorry. Okay, you guys too. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Nice.
Thanks.
Well, everybody, looks like we had some technical difficulties with Carl's connection, but that's okay. We're still here. So that was awesome having Ted on the show. And we do have some upcoming, I think, I don't have the schedule in front of me because I was actually producing and doing some other things in the process and trying not to hit my laptop with a hammer because it's beginning to die. Anyway, so we do have a show coming up this Friday for the Legion Network. I'm not sure what on this coming Sunday. I think we're going. Danae is going to have a show, her dungeon show. And just a reminder that I'm currently on a break. I will be producing and helping out whenever anything like this happens. So we appreciate it. Corey, thank you so much for being on, for being our co-host, and
certainly.
Good night, and I think that's about all we have. So, thank you so much for listening,
and thank you
everyone.
For stepping in.
that's part of being a producer and techno ninja.
You are such a ninja.
Well, if there's a Viking, if there's such a thing as a Viking ninja, I would be that.
You can be whatever you want to be.
This is true. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for listening in, and have a great night.
Good night, everybody.